how's everyone been? What's going on?
Oh, well, that question's always a hard one.
I know, sorry. Yeah, that's hard.
How can I account for my time in the week since I saw you last?
Yeah, what have you achieved?
Oh, that's a high bar.
How have you contributed?
I made some barbecue ribs.
Okay.
In my barbecue, that was probably the highlight of my week.
That's quite cool. That's
you only make some food and it's really nice. And then you just think about it basically nonstop for about a week afterwards and you can't really think about anything else.
It's a bit of a humble brag, that.
Where was the humble bit?
No, it wasn't. It was a brag. It was
just full-blown old school, traditional.
It was an arrogant brag. Yeah. That was a classic arrogant brag.
Things though, if you had eaten these ribs, you'd be saying that I was downplaying it, I was soft-pedaling it.
Yeah.
Well, who witnessed this? Did your partner, at least? Were there friends who got involved?
My partner had some of it. I ate most of it.
Well, as was your right.
It or them?
It or them?
Yeah, I mean...
Are you thinking a single mega rib? You didn't specify the species. It could have been one 18-foot-long whale rib, couldn't it? To be fair.
No, I said ribs. So it could be two 18-foot-long whale ribs.
Basically, I'm trying to pick holes in Ben's, like, bulletproof arrogance to do with how well his ribs went. I'm just being a rib pedant, and I'm trying to find any weakness in his rib story.
Okay.
So, how many ribs was it then?
I think about nine ribs.
Mm-hmm. Nine ribs.
Yeah.
So not even. Four from one side, three, five from the other.
The butcher's dozen.
Butcher's dozen.
What was the secret to your success? Was there a glaze? A marinade?
There was a glaze. Yes, there was a glaze. I used the American barbecue sauce, Sweet Baby Ray's.
Oh, hang on.
Wait a minute.
You've got an opening here, Henry, because it sounds like he's used a pre-prepared sauce.
Which I then mixed
in some Branston's pickle
with apple cider vinegar.
It's too late by that point. You can mix it as much as you like. It's too late.
Mixing is
cooking.
The body
of that sauce is pre-made.
Mixing is cooking.
Mixing plus heat equals cooking, correct? Except in the case of salads, which, are they cooking or not? Big French debate.
Have they just been left on a radiator? Who knows?
Exactly.
We don't have time. We can't do that in an hour, Henry.
That's a huge French debate right now. That's
the European Parliament is currently tearing its hair out about that.
That's been going on for years. It deals with most of the French... That's why they've got such a huge civil service, isn't it? It's just so much dealing with that question of is salad cooking or not?
Well, that's why every town has a quite... powerful mayor who can at any time kind of either amplify or tamp down that debate happening in their town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he can seize dressings at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
They still have the right to seize dressings. They'll often do that in the middle of the night. when a French family will often be eating salad.
Well, I'm very much in the camp of once you're making a dressing, you're emulsifying.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And for me, that is cooking.
Which means you're creating a suspension of fat molecules within a liquid. Gas or jar. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. And so are you saying emulsifying is heating by any other name?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, and I'm saying that maybe, and I know that there are archaeologists out there who say this and who've looked at cave paintings, that actually the Neanderthal prehistoric man made dressings before they cooked over fire.
Yeah, and they've found evidence, they've found traces, haven't they, in that old ancient French cave.
Jars with chervil and oil.
Yeah, they found scatterings of pine kernels and pumpkin seeds, haven't they?
Yes, ancient croutons.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They found evidence of Stilton dressings, Roquefort dressings, the Waldorf.
And of course, raw lardons. I mean, that was what tipped them over, was they weren't quite sure what to do with these lardons.
That's it.
Yep.
And they eventually had to invent fire to cook those lardons.
That's right.
Oh, Mike, when you were in America recently, did you have any ranch?
The ranch dressing?
Yeah, the weirdest food. I mean, I don't think I've ever had it.
I don't think I had it knowingly. I don't know what it is, really. What is it?
It's the taste
of a
ranch.
Barbecue? Okay. So what is that? Sort of gun rights?
huge hats, gun rights.
Hooves.
Big car.
Yellow ribbons.
Chaps.
Hot chaps.
And a great sense of community.
Yeah.
And a travelling preacher man who's carrying heat.
Oh, nice. I like him.
Yeah. He's got a black Bible that's got a gun in it.
Do you mean packing heat rather than carrying heat?
He's carrying
heat sounds like you've got an infection that could probably be dealt with a single dose of penicillin. But if left, would have disastrous consequences. Yeah, that sounds like there's a contact tracing element required.
He's nursing heat, and he's got the black outfit, the black hat.
Mm.
And he's just like a cowboy where everything's black,
mm-hmm.
but he's got a little dog collar and a little Bible. But so he's quite a cool sort of
good character you're sketching here, Henry.
Yeah,
I like this. What's he called?
He's called Billy Bob Ranch Pete.
You probably need to chuck a Doc in there somewhere. I don't think it matters where Doc goes.
Yeah, you're right, Doc. Doc, yeah. Billy Bob Paul. Yeah, Bob, Paul.
Billy
Paul.
Billy Doc Paul. Paul Doc.
Billy Doc. .com. Yeah, and he's got various jars of various jars and little bottles, hasn't he, of ointments and things.
He's ordained to kill. By the power vested in me, die.
Anyway, I'm not sure what ranch dressing is.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to talk about, isn't it?
It's basically the only American foodstuff that hasn't kind of made it anywhere else, I think.
I'm picturing a kind of salmon-coloured wobbly dressing.
I think you're on the right
sort of
track.
Pinkish, sort of got some peachy, thick. Sort of thick
I'm
wobbly.
I'm imagining it to be very sweet for some reason.
Yeah, it's going to be sweet.
I think it looks a bit like matte white emulsion paint.
Okay, but pink.
I don't know if it's pink.
Is it matte pink emulsion?
Don't know if it's pink. I can look it up.
I was imagining it's more a sort of tawny brown. Is it one of those ones where it's a different colour to the bottle? The bottle is a certain colour and you're expecting to pour something out that's brown. And
that's Pepto-Bismol.
Okay. Which I can tell you now does not work on an Issoise at all.
On salads?
No.
Also, what is Pepto-Bismol?
We still don't know.
What is Sinatogen tonic wine?
That's just vitamins, isn't it? That's for ancient... I think the tonic wine bit is just the snake oil part of it, isn't it?
So what's the Sinatogen bit?
Isn't that just the name of a huge company that makes vitamins? I think tonic is the bit that you, if you're of a certain generation, you can persuade someone that if something's got tonic in, then it's going to be very good for you.
Have you just sent us something?
That ping was a photo. Oh, that's ranch dressing.
I've just sent you both a photograph of some ranch dressing.
It is white emulsion, you're right. Oh, no, I definitely didn't have that. That doesn't look very appealing to me. I have to be honest, it's got a touch of dirt. It looks too mayonnaise-y. It looks like mayonnaise plus.
It's so white emulsion. That is ready to go. That could go straight on that looks like they go on a bathroom wall, if you go on a shed wall. it's gonna keep moisture in. That is a good paint.
An outhouse or a pork chop, doesn't matter. It's ready to go.
Yeah, to me, anything that's white as a dressing is a bit, anything that's non-transparent.
Or at least translucent. Yeah.
Or at least translucent.
Minimum.
It's completely opaque, this one.
The dressing should spread itself, right? You shouldn't have to get a palette knife out to have to spread your dressing around the salad, I think.
Yeah. And it shouldn't be instantly hardening so that you have to keep punching through it.
There shouldn't be any violence in the consumption of a salad.
I think creating a crust.
This might be
roof.
Hugely offensive to our American listeners.
Mm.
But I think that the criteria for a good salad dressing in America,
they've taken quite a lot from us.
Yeah, okay.
So those that are still with us are quite a hardy bunch, I think.
Okay. I think that the top criteria for a salad dressing in America is, can you dip a Dorito into it? And can it be used as a dip, essentially?
If you dropped it off the top of the Empire State Building, would it kill a man?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the other side of that coin, of course.
And would you need dental records to identify him or not?
Or would it have to be DNA?
Would it have to be a DNA base? We've had to separate the salad, the dressing DNA from the human DNA.
We've had to put our special
hard.
Dressing centrifuge.
Yeah. And we've identified, we've looked at it, it's a ranch-style dressing, and we've managed to identify my husband as a prof doc Rob Billy Bob doc Rob.
And now the ranch dressing is salmon-coloured.
Dentist come, preacher come, gunslinger, wandered in 16 different states.
Operating in Tennessee in the late 19th century. That's what happens when you use a street-side DNA specialist. Don't use three bean salads, DNA.
DNA in salad dressing, testing suite.
I think what we were talking about at a point was whether a salad is cooking.
Yes.
Mm.
And the long debate that's been going on in France about that. For
Yeah, and I'm on the side is cooking. I think as soon as you're using any kind of kitchen utensils, you're cooking.
So one of the demonstrations they've done in court in for the various legal cases that have happened about this is...
Yeah. Oh, is this Wren 69?
This is Wren 69. So it's the people of Wren.
Yeah, versus Guillaume.
Versus Guillaume. Who was a... Who was Guillaume again?
Well, he was the mascot for one of the major supermarkets, wasn't he? So he was,
Yeah, he was Guillaume. He was a... Well, he was a 15-foot high, tall...
parakeet.
Beef tomato. Well, that was one of the problems was a lot of people couldn't tell if he was a beef tomato or a parakeet because they'd skimped a lot on the costume. So there was also various other legal cases, which were the people versus Guillaume the parakeet, and a separate case, the people versus Guillaume the 16-foot tall beef tomato. And there was also a case which was Guillaume the 16-foot tall beef tomato versus Guillaume the massive parakeet.
Oh, when he sued himself to see which of the ones he was, which is still ongoing, I think.
Yes.
Henry, what am I in French?
Qu'est-ce que je suis?
Qu'est-ce que je suis?
Qu'est-ce que je suis? Mon
qu'est-ce que je suis? That's why people still wear qu'est-ce que je suis t-shirts to this day, isn't it?
They do. Yeah. They do.
And really, that case was about whether he was a beef tomato or a parakeet, but it was also about the soul of the nation, wasn't it? What is France?
Well, exactly.
Really,
exactly.
Fundamentally.
Is France a huge beef tomato? Liberté, fraternité, tomate,
tomatique.
Tomate, tomatique. Tomatique. That is still seen as an unprecedented case that is.
Well, certainly, if you're going to court to work out if you're a beef tomato or a parakeet, that will be the first case your lawyers will look at, for sure.
It's not got the nailed only one. On. It's going to be precedent. It's one of those cases where it's still ongoing, but it's one of those cases where all the lawyers are absolutely buzzing because they know this is going to be precedent. This is going to be precedential.
They're buzzing, but apart from the lawyers who've actually taken on the case because they did it for no and no fee, and it's been going on now for
no 40 years.
And they,
that's I mean, right.
They, yeah.
Yeah.
They're in horrible debt.
Also,
they're in the second generation of lawyers. It's a mess.
It's classic French bureaucracy as well because obviously beef tomatoes are untaxable in France. So that means you can't.
Whereas parakeets are 60p in the franc, aren't they?
So the
parakeet revenue has been propping up the French state for years.
Yeah. And the beef tomato can't earn, can he? That's the tragedy of it. He can't earn while this is going on.
Well, sorry, you are referring to him as a beef tomato before the end of the court case.
We're going to have to cut that. But come on, everyone fucking knows. He's huge and he's red and he's got a big green head. That's one of the chants that the bilingual French
he's
people...
He's huge. He's red. He's got a big green head. Guillaume.
Yeah.
That's what the chant is of the court, isn't it?
He's clearly a beef red tomato.
Because it's the same in French, isn't it? That chant.
C'est grand, c'est
rouge. C'est grand avec un rouge tête grande. Parlez vite, c'est un parakeet. Parlez vite, c'est un parakeet. That's the alternate one.
What people in this country don't tend to understand is obviously over the past few years, or certainly going back years and years and years, people will get annoyed about French lorry drivers going on strike, blocking up Calais, that leading to, you know, big traffic jams in Kent and the knock-on effect it has on British holidaymakers.
Families in Dover.
It's all about that court case because those lorry drivers, they're very much parakeet, actually. They're on the parakeets.
Yes, that's right.
And they wear those gilets parakeet, don't they? With this sort of high-vis feathered tabards.
You'll see them. You'll see holidaymakers. Yeah, it's so sad to see these British holidaymakers. They'll be stuck on a ferry that is now just going round and round Britain. It's not allowed. It's not allowed to dock in France.
They do circle, don't they? It's the same as with aircraft. They have to circle. But unfortunately, with ferries, it's an absolutely enormous circle. They have to get before they can dock again. Just got to keep going round.
Ferries, aeroplanes and sharks all have to keep moving, otherwise they sink.
And if you're on one of those ferries and you're thinking, God, I just want to go to Calais, but where, you know, I can currently see the North
passing
Scotland.
The Orkneys again. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
If you were to break into that, the captain's room, the prow, or whatever it's called, the, what is it called, Mike? You'll know.
The bridge.
The bridge, the bit with the wheel.
The bridge.
The big wheel. Yeah. I assume they still use a big wheel.
It's a big wheel. Yeah, he, that's how he relaxes. He goes and sits on a big wheel. There's lovely views from the top of the big wheel.
It's now a flat screen with a picture of a big wheel on it that you move around with your finger, but it's still using the same technology. It's still that is then wired into pistons. And coal, hot coal.
Anyway, that person will be dressed as a beef tomato because they are very much on the beef tomato side of things.
They're on the beef side, of course.
And that is why they're not being let into the port, because it's been completely clogged up by the parakeet supporting lorry drivers.
Yeah. And but Ben, you now have a situation which is utterly ridiculous, where the captain of the ferry is dressed as a beef tomato, but all of the staff managing the cars on and off the parking areas within the ferry dress as parakeets. And you've got these poor British families, you've got children crying, you've got men and women having to eat Pam out of the packets, which they...
Well, which has been airdropped by the British government. The only way and they,
which we're paying for with our taxes.
And they've got these, and they didn't, these families, they didn't know what's going on. And there are these burly men and burly women dressed as the people that manage the cars, dressed as in the high vis feathered outfits. They've got no idea what's going on. And some of the children, it breaks my heart to think this, some of the children even think it's some sort of game that's been put on for them.
And to some, perhaps it is a game. Hmm.
Well, it's become a
to
game.
The elites,
sick game.
The ruling classes.
That's right.
A deadly game.
Well, it doesn't cost them anything, does it? I mean, the 6 or 7 rich families that control Europe.
Yeah.
Them.
All descended from the Habsburgs.
They have little figurines dressed as beef tomatoes and parakeets that they push around giant maps at home just for fun. Don't they?
Just because they bred out their own earlobes.
They'll never be able to pull off wearing earrings properly. That's the only...
Yeah, that's why they're so cross.
That's why they're so angry.
And of course...
clip-ons aren't the same, Karen. They just aren't.
Which is their motto.
Clip-on earlobe?
Well, clip-on earlobes... Clip-on
the clip-on earlobe, industries. I mean, it's really way behind at the moment.
Yeah. Well, the first question is, what do you clip it onto? I mean, you're right there, you're in trouble.
Well, that's a philosophical question, is it? That's going through the courts in France, isn't it?
That's also going through the French courts.
The sad thing, of course, is that Guillaume himself died in 1998.
Mm. That's right.
So he will never, you know, he will never know whether he was a beef tomato or a parakeet.
And also, because of the legal status of the situation, he's not allowed to be buried. So he's currently... still in one of those costumes.
Well, he's still in that one costume.
But because it can't be, it's not been established, basically, does he get a steak beef tomato funeral or steak parakeet funeral? And it can't be, that's still going through the court. So
he's still in the Wren City Council mega freezer, isn't he? Just waiting.
Well, that's the thing. He spends half the time in the Wren City Council mega freezer and half the time in the Wren...
the Sub-Zero Avery.
In a Sub-Zero mobile Avery.
So, sorry, we're going back to... So Wren 69 was obviously the court case we were originally talking about, which was Guillaume versus the people of Wren to determine...
Whether or not...
that's the really tragic thing about this case, Ben, is that what really was it actually even originally about? Does anyone even remember?
Because I don't, you don't, Mike doesn't.
Because none of us do, and we're experts
in this.
We've
only been talking about it for a quarter of an hour.
Exactly.
Not decades.
But what I would say, Ben, is when you're trying to establish if you think a salad's cooking, then the old thought experiment you do is, I get you, Ben, picture a plate. Can you do that?
Yeah, okay. And this was the legal... sort of tactic of the lawyers in Wren 69, wasn't it? This is what...
That's right, yeah.
Guillaume, every time all he could picture was a bowl, wasn't it? I seem to remember.
That's right. So they fell at the first hurdle.
So yeah, I'm picturing a plate, yeah.
So picture a plate. Now, on that plate, imagine a metal...
a metal man cooking a salad.
imagine a metal hand... Whether or not it's attached to a metal man, don't worry yourself with. Just picture a simple metal hand.
Is it holding the plate or is it on top of the plate?
it's, t- It's dangling downwards above the plate.
Okay.
It's
not on the,
but it's
hovering. Like Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible. Well,
sort of. But out of shot, you don't know. You have to imagine the way you've imagined things.
Oh, hang on. So there's a double layer of imagining. Okay, so imagine yourself imagining.
So yeah, you have to imagine the way you imagine things is like a film where there's an edge of the screen where something can be off camera. Obviously, the truth of how you imagine things is that things...
A lot of it's done in post.
Yeah. But imagine that the arm of the metal hand is off screen, so you don't know if it's attached to a person or if it's controlled by the Pope or anything. It could be anything. Okay. But that's not what you're worried about. What you're worried about is a simple metal hand. Or claw. Okay. That's holding a piece of lettuce.
Okay.
It releases. The lettuce falls onto the plate.
Mm. Yeah.
The hand retracts. The hand is back. It's now holding half of... It's a cucumber slice.
Mm-hmm.
It releases that. The cucumber slice falls onto the salad.
Mm-hmm.
It comes back again.
Yeah.
Now it releases a cherry tomato. Now, cut to half an hour later, there's a salad niçoise, right, on that plate. At what point... did it become a salad?
It's a good question. Yeah. It's a good, very good question.
Yeah, so think about that. Yeah.
I think it was a salad as soon as whichever consciousness was controlling the metal hand, whether that be the Pope, the Habsburgs, some kind of AI, when it decided to make a salad...
Yeah.
The lettuce became a salad in its hand.
Okay. Picture another scenario.
Okay.
You go home. Your fridge has fallen open. There's been a disaster.
Mm.
It's fallen. Your fridge has fallen down. The door is open. And the ingredients of a niçoise salad have accidentally formed themselves in a pile on your kitchen floor.
Into a perfect niçoise.
It's got the lettuce. It's got the it's got the beans.
The potatoes have boiled themselves.
Boiled some eggs.
The potatoes.
What happened? What happened while you're out?
It's an extraordinary coincidence. The potatoes and the eggs have fallen across the room and landed in the pan. That impact has knocked the handle of the pan down. That's hit the hob. That's turned it on. There's also been a leak of water as it happens above the.
Yeah,
hob, which has leaked water down into the pan. That's boiled.
Yeah. Eventually, it's tipped over into a sieve.
It's tipped over into... You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Look. Could happen.
I'm making a good point.
So your question is that a salad at all? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Let alone cooking, mate. Is it even a bloody salad?
I would say that is a ghost salad.
Mm. Okay.
Not a true salad, no.
Okay, not a true salad.
For you, a salad is all about intent, then.
Yes, it's all about intent. Yeah. It's about the mens rea. Is that what it's called?
Right. Yeah.
It's about motive. So it's like a murder case for you.
Yeah.
And there can be a premeditated salad. There can be a salad passionnel. but
it can be a misadventure salad.
Be salad by misadventure. Yeah.
But never a true accidental.
Yeah, that's what I believe. But I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying that's what I believe. And my ribs were excellent. That's the main thing I want people to take away from.
I tell you what all of this has been is food for thought. Now, let's crack open some more food that's related to thought. The bean machine.
Oh, very good, Henry.
Very nice, Henry. Well done.
Oh, thanks.
So the bean machine has done its thing and determined which topic we'll be talking about this week. Mm. Thank you to everyone who's been sending in their topic recommendations, which get put in the bean machine.
Thank you.
I was going to read one out. We got one this week from someone called Jen.
Thank you, Jen.
She writes, I had a dream that I took Mike Wozniak to Disney World and he became angry when I tried to dress him up as an oldie-worldie ruffian.
Mm-hmm.
Three Bean Sound should do a podcast about going to Disney World and not wanting to be dressed up as a ruffian.
Niche.
I have never been to Disney World. That box remains unticked.
So you're not saying you've never dressed up as a ruffian?
I think that's in the eyes of the beholder, potentially.
True.
Because the real ruffians are the people in the designer suits. Am I right?
Oh, there we go.
Exactly.
Yeah?
With the double cuffs.
Yeah.
And the mini, where each shoe is a mini jet ski shoe.
Yeah.
And where every tie pin is a private jet.
And the silk on their underpants is so soft, there's literally a worm spinning it that's attached to their buttocks. They have two buttock worms on each buttock, just spinning live. You're wearing live boxers, essentially, and that's live underwear.
And those worms aren't getting any of the gravy, are they?
They're not eating gravy. Yeah.
Well, they're eating dead skin off your ass.
And turning it into silk, which you're then wearing on your ass, because there's nothing softer to an ass than itself. And an arse can't sit on itself. That was the challenge put down in front of Italian tailors in 1744. And a buttock cannot sit on itself. And if you look at some of the old Hieronymus Bosch paintings, there are people trying to, a rich person trying to sit on his own buttocks in hell forever. He can't reach them. But now.
Well, that was the original Sisyphus, wasn't it? But it was thought to be
thought to be
too blue. So they turned it into pushing a rock up a hill.
Exactly. Yeah. But the subtext was.
Can't sit on your own ass.
It feels like that should be like an idiom, but I don't know what for, really. Do you know what I mean? Like, well, you can't sit on your own ass.
Yeah.
But what, you know, what wisdom does that actually impart?
That we need each other and each other's asses.
You're so right.
You know, famous quotes, right, that become famous? One thing that slightly annoys me is...
All of us are in the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stars.
Are looking at the stars. That was Gary Lineker.
It's usually Gary Lineker.
He improvised that on Match of the Day.
What are you annoyed about? You're annoyed about that none of yours have got famous yet? None of yours are in the syllabus.
It takes a while for them to punch through, Mike. It's a long game, okay? Yeah. They take a while to punch through. Bon mots, aphorisms, proverbs.
Well, maybe we need to hit eBay and Etsy and start selling posters saying you can't sit on your own ass.
You've got to start with a merch. That's the way Oscar Wilde did it. That's the way Gary Lineker did it. They started with merch. It was merch first.
It was merch first and then the product.
Well, then you see which mugs fly off the shelves.
Well, then it becomes a product, which is a TV show called Sitting on Your Own Ass with Henry Panker.
No, I don't think aphorisms tend to spin off into a TV show, do they?
Well, of course, that old phrase, God, this is a right old Antiques Roadshow. That one has. This is a great game we're watching. How I'd call this one my match of the day. I don't know about you. That 10-minute TV show.
What's the news? Yeah, I guess there are a few when you think about it.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, all of them are, I think. What's the weather? That's turned into one. What do you call those people that get up to various, you know, fairly sort of mundane, but at the same time quite suspenseful and emotionally sort of fraught family and friend and work-related incidents who live towards the East End of London? Or EastEnders, that's
there
one.
There we go.
Yeah, okay. Okay. I'm corrected.
I mean, it's not an enjoyable point. I'm not enjoying making it.
But Henry, I think in order for our listenership to start using the phrase, you can't sit on your own ass, like we've got a certain number of listeners now who, if we can get this into their everyday speech,
we can start seeding
this, not just in Britain, but across the world. But what we need is a conversation in which this could be used so people can understand the
situation.
Yeah.
A situation that it sheds the light of wisdom.
Exactly.
For example, you are trying to get out, you're trying to flee the barn, but you've already closed. You haven't closed the door yet. Well, that one.
Or you've bolted it, or you haven't bolted it. Or you've bolted it, but it's too late. But on your island. Even though you're not on island. Yeah?
That one. We need to find a situation where... So, like you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
So there are ones where you go... You reach for a phrase, because it's useful.
Well, that's what they are, yeah.
Yeah, that's phrases. You can't sit on your... Well, it's so, for example, if...
So I think Mike is right. I think it means you sort of can't do everything on your own.
The only trouble with it is it's not about doing something, is it? It's about not doing something. It's about doing naff all.
This could be the first great phrase that is simply never applicable to any situation either in life. It's just not applicable. It's still true, but it never comes up.
But I'm trying to popularise it here, Henry. We need to find a...
Yeah, no, you're right. You can't sit on... I think it's someone who's trying to do everything by themselves. They're multitasking. You've taken on too much, Carol.
You can't sit on your own ass, Carol. Yeah.
Carol's so busy, she's been meaning to buy a sofa for 4 years but hasn't got around to it.
Yeah.
And finally, one of her friends says, well, you can't sit on your own ass. So she does buy a sofa.
Then she's going to
possibly purchasing of sofas.
No, Mike, I think you've misunderstood how aphorism works.
I think that's the whole point. Mike, that's the worst possible case to use. Mike,
okay.
You, frankly, you, I wish you could shit on your own arse.
Shit on your own arse. I can manage that. Can manage that any day of the week, mate. Just a poorly timed sneeze is all it takes with me these days.
Can I say, you know what you can't sit on your own arse is? It's a classic case of a phrase. It sounds like it's a phrase which is like Italian or something and just doesn't quite translate.
The old Chinese proverb.
Yeah.
It's like what we're saying. It's like you can't sit on your own, and you go, yeah, I can see there's some wisdom in that, but it's probably something that's very localized to Italy or China.
Probably an original word in there somewhere with a couple of dual meanings that we're not quite getting. It's not
exactly.
Yeah.
So, Carol, you've taken on too much, right? You've got your own business you're running. You're also running several other people's businesses for them, uncredited. You've got to relax.
You've got marathon on Thursday.
You've got a marathon on Thursday. And I've heard that the marathon is taking place 26 miles away from your house and you've decided to run there. Come on, Carol.
Why not accept a lift from your cousin Timothy? Because after all,
you can't
sit on your own arse.
I mean, you can't sit on your own arse, Carol. But the trouble with that is that it feels like Carol sort of needs to sit on her arse in a way to relax. She's doing too much. We're telling her she can't sit on her own arse.
I've just realised the problem with this as well. You can sit on your arse. That's exactly what we're all doing now.
Oh, no, but you can sit on your arse.
But that's the point.
You're missing the point that you can't sit on your own arse.
Yeah. No, I understand the point, but I think in terms of the aphorism, trying to get this popular, people would just go, well, you can sit on your arse.
But no, that's good. That's in its favour because one of the most famous aphorisms is you can't have your cake and eat it too.
But you can.
And exactly. Through the ages, people have got incensed about that, but that's what's made it so catchy.
Great.
That's why people love it, because it gets people's blood up. And then, what does it mean?
Ben, the reason it's a good phrase. So a lot of these phrase meetings get very, very heated. And that's why, because people think it's easy to come up with a phrase, like you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That would have been weeks of arguments and stuff with the people that came up with that. So,
well, the plug lobby would have been absolutely incensed at the whole idea of this.
They'd have hated it. But the issue is that the reason it's a good phrase, Ben, is it kind of feels like maybe you could, but the fact is you can't. Because you feel like you can sit on your ass, but you can't sit on your ass. You can sit with your ass.
Yes.
Now, that's the reason it's a good phrase is because it's nearly true. It's like you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's a good phrase because you could actually throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, you could throw it out with the bathwater. So if you say to someone you shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater,
I'm not thick.
It's not. You shouldn't take the baby in a rucksack to the top of Snowdon, and you know, and reenact all the you know Al Pacino's best scenes from his
or his bathtub chucking scenes.
But also, you could do that.
Last time I'm seeing scenes.
You could do that and you should.
Actually, you could and should do that. Anyway. Let's try and get that. We'll try and get that going. You can't sit on your own arse.
Maybe it finds its own meaning. Maybe if we dispatch all of our listeners to just use it, to workshop it, throw it out verbally in emails, whatever it is, you know, maybe one of them will end up in a Vox Pop on local news at some point. I mean, who knows? You know, we might see where it takes hold. It'll develop its own meaning organically by just being disseminated.
And one day we'll hear it. It'll come back to us. And, it may be...
It'll have been picked up by the far right or something, won't it? We'll be like...
Picked up by the far right. It'll have a completely different meaning to what we ever could have imagined.
Yeah.
And it'll be something to do with about how to hide an offensive tattoo from a new employer. It'll be something to do with that.
It'll be the election slogan of some kind of far-right Bulgarian political party called, like, the Iron Guard or something.
Yeah.
And we'll have triggered the beginning of the end of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we as a podcast cannot sit on our own asses because we rely on the topic sent in by the listeners.
That's right.
I thought that was the topic.
What?
What was the topic?
Disney World dressed as a ruffian.
No, that was someone sent it in as a suggestion. That had gone in the bin machine. That hadn't come out.
Oh, I see.
I read that out on the way into the bin machine.
Oh, I see. I beg your pardon. I thought we were doing that topic.
Well, maybe we should now.
How did we get onto arses, though?
I don't know.
What would we call it as a topic?
That.
So the official topic is going to Disney World and not wanting to be dressed up as a ruffian.
I think Jen has suggested that topic, thinking that we won't do it.
Do you think?
Because it's so long and strange and breaks the format in so many ways.
I think
ways.
She's just done it in the middle of the night, hasn't she? She's just fired it off. She's woken up from a dream. She probably doesn't even remember that she sent the email. I bet. It's a 4 a.m. job.
That's a good point. And she probably doesn't even listen to the show.
Exactly.
It's probably just an accidental. The whole thing could be a sort of, you get bum dialed. You get bum emails. It could just be a bum. It could be a bum
you
email.
Get a bum email, especially if your ass trying to sit on itself. There we go.
Hey.
Yeah. It's gone.
Hey, come on, mate.
Yeah, nice. Tasty.
Oh, can I just do a little pompadour?
Yes, please.
And now it's time for pompadour section. Pompadour.
Should we talk about what happened last week and there being no topic?
Well, we could. But the only thing is, I'm thinking that this week feels like it's gone a bit strange as well. I mean, which is fine. I'm happy with it. I'm having a nice time. But it feels like we're hardly in a position to start talking about what happened last week. We're in the middle of an absolute fucking shit show right now. Do you know what I mean? I don't think when they were going down on the Titanic, they're going, God, bloody hell, that Pompeii was a fucking disaster. Have you ever been at Pompeii? No, mate. I'm dealing with a crisis right now, actually, thanks. That's like discussing Pompeii on the decks of the Titanic. We've got another phrase.
Ding, ding, ding.
Well, yes, yeah, so what did happen last week? Well, last week we just did a huge intro.
Catalogue of errors.
Well, there was no topic last week because our intro was so long. I think I just want to put a line in the sand that says that can't keep happening.
No.
We have to cleave hard to this
to the format.
Yeah.
Otherwise what happens if we lose control? Well,
we just become a three dickheads talking podcast, which
and that's one thing we've never been and never will be. And no one would ever think we were.
Yes, because I listened to them. They want the topic. They want the topic. They want to be informed.
Exactly. Yes?
This podcast, more than anything else, is about education.
Yeah.
Where else can you go and listen to an entire podcast about bags, for example, and feel the end of that episode that you now know about bags? You didn't know about bags before. Now you know about bags.
Yeah, yeah.
And the listeners need us to talk about these things because you can't sit on your own arse. You can't...
Exactly.
You can't just educate yourself. Minute. You need others to help you.
Good grief.
I just wanted to make it clear to the listener that we're not abandoning the format.
No, there were possibly mitigating factors last night. We had a very sort of distressed Henry at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
I was dealing with a lot.
I've never seen a Henry quite like it, you know.
It was
all sixes and sevens, wasn't he?
I was all over the shop.
With his central band of sweat. Is your central band dry today?
Central band is, it's like a long, round breadstick stretching all the way around my ribcage. Dry as a...
Lovely.
Dry and crunchy. Lovely.
But what I would say is, format-wise, we've gone from an episode where the format was cast aside...
Yeah.
...to an episode where the topic is going to Disney World and not wanting to be dressed up as a ruffian.
You know, it feels like as a podcast, we're now lurching from one extreme to the other. And we simply don't know what to do, doesn't it? There's an element of that.
And that possibly we might not have done ever at any point.
Yeah.
Can I use another phrase?
Yeah. Mm.
Jump to the shark.
Oh. Yeah,
oh,
that's
no.
we don't want people saying
genuinely
that.
Genuinely chills me.
That's a chiller.
Me.
You know, it can't be that people talk about three being salad in years to come and say, yeah, it was good. And then there's this one episode where they threw out the format. And then the following episode was about going to Disney World, but not wanting to be dressed up as a ruffian. And just after that, it just kind of petered out.
I think the thing about last week is I would say to expect us to go straight back to normal would be unrealistic. You know, when a hard wind rolls across an exposed hill, the tree that doesn't bend, snaps.
Was that an original bit of wisdom?
No, that's a genuine old Chinese proverb. Damn! So hard to come up with. I think that's a genuine proverb, that one.
Okay.
But it's true, you know, like we've got to Well, there's going to be ramifications. You know, you don't get an earthquake without
breaking a few eggs.
Without breaking a few eggs. And, you know.
So you're saying we're in a rebuilding phase?
Yeah. I think we're still feeling the shockwaves and absorbing it, and it's going to have ripple effects.
Yeah.
And, you know, today I think we've sort of gone too far the other way by taking a topic which is unbelievably abstruse.
I think that's fair.
The other day I heard someone, the phrase jump the shark now has got to say where everyone knows what it means and everyone knows where it came from, right?
Yes.
That's what everyone knows.
It's almost as if the phrase...
rare double hits.
It's almost as if the phrase itself is...
you can do it, Henry. It's not going to work, but you can do it. By all means, do it. It's not going to work. It's not going to work.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
Okay, time to read your emails. If you'd like to email us, send them to 3beansaladpod@gmail.com. It's time for Listener Bollocking of the Week.
Bollocking loaded.
We predicted this bollocking and almost sort of, we need maybe a term for when you can see the bollock coming because you set the bollock going.
Have you had an email from a bassoonist?
Well, I've had lots of emails from musicians.
Oh.
Saying that there is such a thing as F flat.
Right.
But I was very, very, very clear.
You were clear.
And some of these emails are long, like proper, like two pages.
lots of capital letters, not much punctuation. Is it like quite angry stuff?
No, it's more like considered.
Oh, right.
Intelligent.
Okay.
I'm a musician and I'm going to sketch out why it's important that in a scale you have one of each letter. So, for example, in the C flat major scale, it's C flat, D flat, E flat, F flat. Otherwise, you'd have to say C flat, D flat, E flat, E. And you've got two E's in the scale. So I've got a lot of hard and heavy music theory.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I want you to cast your mind back just a week to what I said.
Do you want to even play it back in, Ben, maybe? Why don't you play it back in?
If a bassoonist can play an F flat and send it in, then I will accept that bollocking. How's that?
Okay.
But only a bassoon. I'll only take it from a bassoon.
There's decent terms, I think.
Yeah. Or a big oboe. I would only take this information from somebody playing an F flat on their bassoon.
Or big oboe.
Or big oboe. Cor anglais.
By the way, can I say, this refers to a bit of conversation between you two, which happened while I was trying to fix my Wi-Fi connection, I think.
Yeah.
Last week.
Yes.
So I don't really know what this is about.
Well, I think Ben's just explained it.
Oh, yes. No, I know. I realise that, but I wasn't fully 100%, shall we say, dancing to his tune listening-wise. I was very much listening to the beat of my own drum.
It was while Ben was doing one of his smooth classical introductions.
Okay, yeah.
And he mentioned the possibility of a symphony in F-flat.
Then I said that couldn't happen. Then, of course, I caught myself and thought, no, of course, there is such a thing as F-flat.
Why wouldn't there be an F-flat?
Come on, Henry, use your grade 4 flute.
Can I tell you something? I'm a natural when it comes to music. For example, this. That I've done, that's two perfect scales probably. I don't know which, I couldn't tell you a single letter that was in there.
Doesn't matter, is it? That's just the man imposing data on top of it.
I, frankly, when it comes to musical stuff, I'm self-taught. So all the instruments that I can play is because I've taught myself, but I haven't actually taught myself any. So I'm The reason I can't play them is because I've chosen not to teach myself, not because someone else hasn't taught me.
So you're self not taught.
I'm self not taught.
Anyway, it's very clear. I'd only take that information from somebody who sent me a recording of them playing that note on a bassoon. You haven't done so. So all of those, and there's literally 10-ish emails.
Saying that there's no such thing as F flat, is that right?
There is such a thing.
Exactly. Okay, you've had a few chances now to listen in on this one, Henry.
No, but I think he's right because I'm not accepting it. I'm still not accepting it, despite knowing it to be true.
So are we going to play in one of them playing F flat or not?
No, because they haven't sent it in.
Because they're saying it can't happen.
Right? No, because they're saying it can't because they haven't done it.
It's because they haven't got a bassoon, probably.
They haven't got a bassoon or a big oboe.
Cor anglais.
So is it the classic case of someone saying, oh, I could do it, I just don't happen to have a big bassoon?
It's the classic case of that, yeah.
Well, they haven't got a leg to stand on then.
They haven't got a big bassoon and they haven't got the inclination to play it. What was it? C-flat major scale.
I'm going to be totally honest with you. I'm saying something genuinely from the heart right now.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no idea about anything that we're talking about. I couldn't explain any of this to anyone. I don't know anything. I just literally have not taken on any of this. But I've had a nice time.
And why have you decided to say that now in series 6?
No.
When at almost any point in the past year and a bit, you could have said that.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know. I think something's changing since last week.
Last week has cast a long shadow on this podcast.
Long, long shadow. I mean, I've gone from eating bananas in the last section to rice cakes as well, so...
Says something, doesn't it? So yes, that is for me a very robust bollocking not accepted. That's a reflecto bollock.
Reflecto bollock. And also, if anything, I'd say bollock entrapment. They've fallen into your bollock trap, haven't they? You knew that bollock was coming.
I don't think so. And also, I don't think you're in the position to say that because you just admitted you don't understand anything that's happening.
Yeah, we'll snip that out, Mike. Ben, what you've done is the equivalent of making digging a hole in the middle of a forest in the exact shape and size of a bollock and covering it with leaves.
Yes.
And sure enough, the next morning, what we're having for breakfast? One hot bollock on the skewer.
So why did he put the bollock in a ditch covered in leaves?
No, hole's the shape of a bollock.
Hole. Oh, catch
a bollock's falling in.
Okay.
Mike, are you listening?
We'll be eating bollock tonight.
None of us listening.
Okay. Let's move on.
Bollock in a soy glaze.
Guys, we've got to listen to each other. You can't sit on your own arse.
Oh.
Oh.
A Larry from New Zealand emails. She's from somewhere called Diamond Harbour.
Lovely.
Sounds nice, doesn't it?
Sounds like a great setting for a soap opera.
Does, doesn't it?
Yes.
I'm not going to marry you because I'm already married to you.
Diamonds in their eyes and diamonds in the sea. Come with us and meet the families of Diamond Harbour.
That's fantastic.
You're no brother to me, but you are a mother to me.
Diamond in the sea.
Larry was trying to work out what our favourite desserts would be. She writes, I imagine...
What do you mean would be? Under what circumstances?
Well, are, I guess.
Okay.
I guess it would be in the circumstance that we could have whichever dessert we wanted.
She probably didn't imagine the question would be interrogated quite so immediately.
So I think so some roughly. Of the caffeine's just hitting... I've gone into my pedantic caffeine response. I've just had quite a lot of coffee and I've gone ultra pedantic and I will be for a few minutes now, sorry.
I think you've also got a bit of a hangover from the Diamond Harbour kind of soapy kind of back and forth you get with
you're in melodrama mode.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm like. That's exactly what I'm in. I'm in melodramatic Diamond Harbour mode. Yeah, you call this? You think this is a tiramisu? Look a little bit closer. It's a tiramisu, Susan. It's your wife.
Diamonds in there. Diamond.
She says she imagines Henry with something fancy and French and slightly unpredictable, like an orange creme brulee.
Orange creme brulee. What do you think of that? I don't know, Henry, you're quite trad French, aren't you, when it comes to French things?
I don't mind a creme brulee. I probably wouldn't go for orange one.
That's what I'm saying. The benchmark creme brulee.
I'll go for
a novelty mint choc chip creme brulee. None of that business.
None of that stuff. I'll go for a pom.
You just have an apple.
I'll have an apple, thanks.
Have a big old blowout on the weekend. Yeah, cheers.
Yeah, just take the apple, thanks.
For Mike, she says, mixing a traditional solid foundation with fruit, an apple strudel.
Very strong. I'll take it. I absolutely bloody love an apple strudel. I feel she understands me. She hears me. I feel seen.
It almost feels like she's been examining our stools because they're
Yeah. That's a harder job with Ben, though, with the bee machine attached. So what has she got for you, Ben?
That's a hell of a trip.
Well, she says she's not sure about me. She can't think of a Welsh or Eastern European ham equivalent dessert. So she's gone for a cheese plate.
Well, you look disappointed. You've got quite a sweet tooth, though, haven't you, Ben?
Oh, yeah. I want tiramisu upon tiramisu.
You'll have a cheese plate, sure, but you're not going to miss out on the pudding trolley.
No, I'm all about that pudding. I want a tiramisu tower.
There we go.
Is she responding to the tiramisu stuff there, or is it just...
I think so.
Just coincidental? Yeah.
She says, if you ever visit New Zealand, you must have hokey pokey ice cream and lemon poo hoy yoghurt.
Okay. I'll give that a go. Does she give any further details?
No.
I would never go near a yoghurt dessert. I'm very much a yoghurt skeptic. I think yoghurt is some sort of conspiracy. I don't know what it is. Literally, what the hell is yoghurt? I think I saw a documentary once that said that yoghurt was basically invented by ad men in the 70s.
No, it wasn't.
As a way of disposing of like old curdled milk or something. There's some sort of thing, but I've never been able to track down that documentary again, but it was very compelling. There's some sort of conspiracy around yoghurt. Like, think about it. Why the hell are you eating yoghurt? It's mad.
Cool, sweet, refreshing yoghurt.
I think you're right. I think in the 70s, they rejuvenated yoghurt as a product.
That's it.
When they brought out ski yoghurts.
This is the documentary, Ben. Did you
see it? Yeah, I think I probably saw it, yeah.
They repositioned it as as a health
thing? To a lifestyle choice, a cool
lifestyle choice. Yeah, they made out that it was healthy, but the stuff they were selling wasn't at all healthy because it was just all
true. That's it.
So that's her emails, I think. I mean...
By the way, I'd love to hear more from people about tiramisu, by the way. So do keep that tiramisu stuff coming in. I know we've had a lot of emails already.
You've got a zeitgeist map of the world, haven't you? You're seeing where it's spreading. Yeah, Henry's tracking the tiramisu zeitgeist spread as we speak. It's made it into Central Asia, certainly. It's swept through Africa.
I've already identified some super spreaders. Greg Wallace. Mm-hmm. Some of them won't want to be named, but there are... I'm just trying to work out the pattern. Is there a tiramisu ground zero where it started?
The first tiramisu? Is that what you're trying to get back to?
Oh, certainly for this current incarnation or era of tiramisu, because I think it's now clear we're entering the second great tiramisu era. Yeah, I think that's now undeniable. We're in it now.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah. So keep those emails coming in. We haven't got time to read all of them. We haven't got time to read them. I mean...
Yeah, do send them. Henry won't read them, but please do send them. Just to be clear, there's absolutely no chance of Henry reading any of those emails.
We don't have time to... We simply don't have time to read them. Please keep them coming in. But we've got to be realistic. We don't have time to read them. But keep them coming
in. We have time. We're just not going to do it.
We have time. Yeah. Obviously, we do.
Diamonds in their eyes and diamonds in the sea. Come with us and meet the families of Diamond Harbour.
/3beansalad. Thank you to everyone who signs up on our Patreon.
Thank you very much indeed.
There are three tiers. We don't normally talk about Patreon very much, but I'm going to do it. There's three tiers.
Yeah.
One tier means you get ad-free episodes. get rid of them ads.
Which is the Harrico tier.
Correct. Next tier up, you get ad-free episodes, but you also get a monthly bonus episode, which is made up of stuff that we've held back from these episodes. So there'll be more Disney World ruffian chat that will only be available there.
Pinto tier.
That's called the Pinto tier. And on the third tier, the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out in the Sean Bean Lounge where Mike was last night.
Indeed.
And quite an evening, I think. I believe it was the early Christmas dolphin pageant. Is that right?
That's exactly right.
It gets earlier every year.
It does, the early Christmas dolphin pageant.
It actually really starts to annoy me. It's literally October, people.
Yeah, but the dolphins love it.
That's true.
And they're voluntarily. And here's my report. The snorkels were high and the blowholes were fizzing like freshly sugared yeast at the Sean Bean Lounge last night, which had been especially flooded for the early Christmas dolphin pageant. The dolphins arriving late as per, Michael attempted to entertain the crowd by swallowing a mackerel whole before dancing across the surface of the water on his flukes with such vigour that he triggered a whirlpool, which sucked him into the Patreon lounge of a podcast about the childhood of Pat Sharp. The dolphins having finally arrived, they were signed in, given guest pass lanyards and novelty Sean Bean masks by Laia Serrano-Munet, and teamed up with their partners, Jane Bryant and her Indo-Pacific bottlenose depicted a Levantine closed in as never seen before by balancing balls on the ends of their noses. Kathleen Canning and her Vaquita pulled off Three Shepherds, a Donkey and a decent Balthazar with a series of high-spinning flips through coloured hoops, only slightly marred by landing on John Bleasby and his observation raft and crushing him to the shape that's the opposite of a porpoise. Ever open-minded, John generously said he was after a new look anyway, and kinda prefers it. Audrey Rauch mopped up most of the spare characters by juggling two La Platas, a South Asian river dolphin and a false killer whale, leaving only Caesar Augustus to be portrayed by Tom McGonagall being fired repeatedly into the ceiling from the blowhole of an Irrawaddy. Never has the Christmas story been told so early and so wetly. Thanks all.
Right, let's work out whose version of our theme tune will play us out. Thank you to everyone who sent in a version of our theme tune. This is from Liam. He's behind. He says, I'm on a journey through the archives of the pod, listening to each show in a row, and he's currently up to Islands.
Okay.
He says he's attached a jingle, which is in that sort of stadium synth-pop R&B style.
Nice.
Not really sure what that means, but we'll find out.
No.
Thank you, Liam.
Sounds pretty epic. Thank you very much indeed, Liam.
And until next time.
Thank you, everybody. Bye.
Bonsoir.
Thank you and goodbye.